This is the opening of a chamber oratorio titled Considering Matthew Shepard, evoking Johann Sebastian Bach right at the start. Composer Craig Hella-Johnson told Presto Music in 2016, "This work was born out of an intense heart response I felt when I first learned about the brutal beating and death of a 21-year-old gay man, Matthew Shepard, in October 1998. Year after year, I held the intention to respond to this in some way, but it took me a long time, until 2013, before I felt ready to approach any kind of response. In some ways, this piece has been an exploration of one primary question. In the midst of considering such confounding dark reality and violence, is love to be found anywhere? My intention was to make choices about what would best serve this larger narrative arc and the universal messages I hope it carries. I created this work so that Matt Shepard would be remembered and to create a space for consideration, reflection, unity around his life and legacy." Choral conductor Andrew Hahn uses the concept of catharsis as he tries to explain the power of this work, Considering Matthew Shepard, contending there is a cathartic transformation for us as we listen, embedded in the work's narrative and music, one that leads us to a deeper understanding of the human condition and a hope of an eventual reconciliation for all. The oratorio shapes the image of the protagonist in two ways. First, an ordinary boy named Matt, as he was known to his family and friends, and second, as a martyr named Matthew, as he was known to the rest of the world. Hahn suggests the whole work is about the journey of life itself, and this journey is essentially a cathartic transformation from the individual to the collective. Just as the small-town Matt becomes the universal Matthew, the generic I in the work, transformed by the musical journey, becomes an I eventually able, through the segment All of Us, to say, "Only is the love, love that lifts us up." That from an essay titled From Matt to All of Us by Andrew Hahn of the Ottawa Choral Society. We can trace the concept of tragedy back to Aristotle and the ancient Greeks, rooted in the healing power of storytelling. As Richard Carney contends in Tragedies That Arouse Pity and Fear in the Viewers, we are invited to revisit our own lives through the actions and the personas of others so as to live our lives otherwise. Intrepidus Theater Lab is rooted in a vision of theater that goes back to the Greeks, the notion that audience members can be moved and even changed by powerful works on stage. Justin Costello, founder and artistic director, has produced a number of tragedies by the Greeks and re-envisioned them for our time. To mark the 25th anniversary of the premiere of the play, The Laramie Project by Moises Kaufman and the Tectonic Theater Project, Intrepidus will present the work this week with Diva Theater in Scranton, directed by Justin Costello. Costello paid a visit to the WVIA Benko studio with actor Marcy Reby to talk about the production.
At Intrepidus, and especially how I view theater, it should provoke something. It should make you think. In ancient times, going back to the Greeks, the Egyptians, you know, theater was a way of connection, and it was used to elevate, to teach those who witnessed it. And it was very ritualistic at that time. So what I do is I bring that to today. And every production, whether it's original, whether it's something completely out of the box, avant-garde, or whether it, in this case of the Laramie Project, a verbatim theater, mainly people think is a talking head show, I look at it and take it from a different lens to make it something more powerful and try to elevate it so that it does stir conversation. It does stir a discussion about topics.
And Marcy, you are a playwright yourself. You have been a longtime theater maker at Diva Theater, but you also have worked with Justin a lot at Intrepidus, and you like to do these pieces.
I think it's a very different kind of theater, especially from the theaters that we have locally. Justin has new ideas and does experiments with theater that, you know, people don't see around here. You have to go to New York or Chicago, a big city, to see different kinds of theater like that. And it's exciting to be a part of.
And I wonder if you can remind people when the Laramie Project came out as a piece of theater, how many years it's been, and the real-life incident on which it's based.
The incident happened in October of 1998. A few years later, in 2000, is when the play premiered. This is the 25th anniversary of the Laramie Project. And since its premiere, and it premiered actually just outside of Laramie, Wyoming, it's been one of the most produced productions, professionally, non-professionally, community theater schools, in this, definitely, decades.
I wonder, with your background in Greek theater and tragedy, do you see this as a piece that has echoes in the past?
Definitely. In fact, we opened the show with a 3-minute movement sequence that's very ritualized. And the interesting thing is the show does, it's around this horrible, heinous hate crime where Matthew Shepard, a 21-year-old college student at the University of Wyoming, was left for 17 hours on an October evening tied to a fence, and when he was found by another classmate, that classmate thought he was a scarecrow and a Halloween decoration. The interesting thing about the production and the play, the script that Moises Kaufman and the Tectonic created, that's the beginning of their exploration. Matthew is not a character at all in the play. They wanted to go out west from New York and explore the town, to get into the mindset of, where are these people coming from? How are they taking this? By the time they arrived a month later, Matthew had already passed, and the media had already been out there and bombarded the town. And this small theater group, you know, 10 of them, wanted to go and see, will they talk to us? Let's find out what the pulse is. And it was much more interested in how the murder and events past that, how it's changed and affected these people, and where they're coming from.
Marcy, you'll be very busy in this production.
Got 5 characters that I portray. 2 are minor characters, and then I have Zaki Salmon, who is a woman from rural Texas who moved to Laramie. Catherine Connolly, who was the first out lesbian professor on the University of Wyoming campus in 1992. And I also play Reggie Flutie, who was the deputy who responded to the 911 call about Matthew.
It was interesting to hear you say, Justin, that some people call it a talking heads piece. You are doing things so no one perceives it that way?
Usually it's done with 9 people, and they all portray over 60 characters. And they're coming in and out, and usually on a proscenium stage or in the round, and they speak directly to the audience, and they move on. We do things a little differently. We try to take the moments, it's structured in moments, combine them together and use the environmental staging where the audience is everywhere, the actors are everywhere, and we recreate the bar, the fireside bar. We recreate, you know, the prairie and the fence. We recreate the courtroom setting and try to make actual scenes out of all the descriptive narrative and the recollections of all the interviewees.
And Marcy, you know Diva Theater so well. That's where you're doing this. Tell us how what Justin has just described is possible in an intimate space like Diva.
Well, I think it's really transformed the space at Diva. One of our company members said, I've never seen anything like this at Diva. Because, of course, it's environmental seating with people sitting on the stage and with actors from the show moving through the audience, sitting with the audience at points. So it's really, it's going to be an interesting experience for people, I think. Maybe unnerving for some people.
How do you use lighting? Lighting must figure in that.
Everything is grassroots with us, mostly. We have the stage lighting that we'll be using, but then we have our Intrepidus lights and trees, and we hook them up in various locations, and we get experimental with it. It's not typical stage lighting that we're going to be using throughout the show, because we need to light very non-traditional areas.
When you say that the audience and the actors are intermingling, does that make us, as an audience member, have to ask ourselves how we would be thinking if we were a resident of Laramie, Wyoming?
The entire reason for that concept is the fact that, like today, granted it's 25 years later, there's an issue of being disconnected in our culture. Neighbors don't know their neighbors, or they are angry at their neighbors for cultural or political or what have you. Families are separated. The beast of hate has reared its ugly head. And we're in this time of, you know, just heated tension. The opposite of that is connection, is listening, is community and communion. So by mixing up the staging, forcing the audience, witnesses, to be active participants, with the actors sitting right next to them, watching and reacting things that they're not in, and at times welcoming the audience to join in and to join this. We're all in this world together. We all have things that face us day to day. There's more that connects us than keeps us apart. Sometimes we need to be shown that and have a dialogue to get there. And that's kind of the whole theme that we're focusing on with this production.
Reggie is the name of the one who received the call.
Right.
Does Reggie go through in the play or in Reggie's life? Was there a change of heart or a change of understanding?
We don't really find out how Reggie was prior to the incident. She first shows up in the show at the fence when she finds Matthew. But I feel like she has a different character arc. Right? She doesn't have a character arc that she goes from maybe being homophobic to accepting. Her character arc is that, you know, the fact that Matthew was HIV positive, and due to circumstances beyond her control, she had to try to help him without having, you know, PPE like people would have today. So that's her struggle in the show.
Justin, you mentioned earlier the Tectonic Theater Project and the small number of actors who presented so many characters in this piece. How many are you working with?
We have 17, 10 of which are brand new to the lab. So we have Marcy and other mainstays. We have Kevin Costley, Colleen Pony, Darren Moore. And then we have a whole lot of new ones like Justin O'Hearn and Paul Miscavige that have joined us. And it's great seeing the new people come and kind of us veterans be like, welcome into the fold. This is going to be out of your wheelhouse, but we're all in this together. And some of them have really taken to it and enjoyed it.
I think about the two brand new people to theater that we have. We have two people who have never auditioned to be in a show before, David Posner and Maggie Conway. And I think they're having a fantastic experience just from when I've talked to them outside of rehearsal, which is really exciting because it's always nice to have new people and new perspectives.
Marcy, if you're playing two minor ones. Is it one of those, you take a hat off and you're somebody else?
Absolutely. We have decided that, you know, everyone has a prop for their character, more or less. just as a visual cue for the audience, but also for us as a way to say, oh, I'm Zachy now, or, oh, it's time to be Reggie.
We introduce them all, but once we have gone through the introductions, it's been a main focus to really solidify who your character is. So that way, every time you're speaking, we don't have to re-announce you. And so the props and the little costume pieces will be visual cues to the audience to remember, oh yes, this was this person, that was 10 minutes ago.
We talked about character arc. What about the arc of the story? You told us how we open with the movement.
It's interesting. The show itself is in three acts, so we will have two intermissions. The first act is about the town itself and then finding the body. Act two jumps to the media, and the media coming in and goes through, you know, what's happening after Matthew's been taken to the hospital. And the third act really focuses on the trials of Aaron McKinney and Russell Henderson and the aftermath of that. The Tectonic Group went out six times in the course of the year, and they were there for some of that. And so it's a collection of all of that. So it's kind of like thematically connected, but each act feels different. But we've managed to take some of the movement stylings and patterns from the very opening show, and we've incorporated that through other moments in the show as connective tissue.
Is the dialogue then, say, for the trial, from the trial?
It's actual court proceedings and records. There are many characters that they got from public record. Others refuse to give their names, so they're anonymous. But it's a collection of actual interviews and then what was public knowledge or on news reports, as well as open court filings and records.
Is there a sense of hope? Is there a sense of light? Our humanity must be challenged, but is there a sense that all is not lost?
That was the most important thing from the moment I said, yes, let's do this, that I wanted to make known. So especially how we begin the show and how it ends. There's a character named Doc. There's a quote from Harvey Milk that said, you know, you gotta give them hope. And at the end of Act Two, Doc actually says this, and his own version, rather, of the Harvey Milk quote. And it's interesting that an act ends on a single thing like that. But that is the key to this. There's no point in talking about horrific things and people fighting and not getting along and religious zealotry if it's not for a purpose. And the purpose is that connection and that hope that if we stop and actually listen to each other, we can make a positive difference and move forward, recognizing that past. And the sad thing is, there are people in the show who had no idea who Matthew Shepard was. And there are people that I know who are the younger generation who have no idea whatever happened in Laramie, Wyoming. Meanwhile, back in 1998, I was at Fordham and we were at the marches for the vigil in the streets. So for people of our generation, Generation X, we will never forget it.
We step back to the beginning when we were talking about your approach to theater, Justin. You are convinced that theater is one of the ways that we connect, if it's only for an hour and a half or however long a production takes, that that's something that might be lasting.
I believe so. And the fact that it's live, it's in person. You go see a film and there's a screen there. There's a separation automatically. Getting rid of a proscenium stage, especially what we do, having the actors literally 1 foot away from you, you feel that energy. You begin to work and respond back and forth. You know, it's like the yin and yang, and that energy flows, and there's no way it can't touch you. And I believe that energy, no matter what it is, will always make a change in you. And we make sure that people aren't just sitting there watching the show, but become active witnesses and participants so that they do get that in their head.
I think that's what's exciting about your approach to theater. Right, if I think of the theater setup we have for this show, there's things taking place all over the theater. So even if it's as much as having to turn in your seat just to look at a different way or see a different perspective, I feel like that's a way to make people connect with what we're trying to do.
when the lights turn off finally and you strike the set, how do you, Justin, work with your actors and crew to see what they've finally thought after actually doing it with an audience and can learn as actors and people themselves, not just the audience members?
It's funny that you say that, because I say kind of like a broken record. The lab, it's in Trevor Shooter Lab, it's all about training and learning, and I want every artist who works there, no matter what facet, whether it's a actor or someone who's doing design work or tech work, to learn skills and be better than they were before, learn something new, rather. So I always, you know, give me feedback, let me know what worked for you, what doesn't. How do you feel as an artist going through? And with every show, I kind of make sure to see where they are on that track.
Do you use music at all?
90% of the show is underscored. I use music. Most of the music I got from Jorge Mendez, who's an amazing independent pianist and composer. I've used him for lots of the works. And with this show, particularly, the silence are the parts to be, okay, it's completely silent. What's going on here? Yeah, so there's constant music to add that layer of either unease or somberness or solitude, reflecting the night sky out in Wyoming or
pathos.
Something. Yeah, pathos, yes.
There's the Greek word for you.
Yes, thank you. Just something to help electrify and get your nerves going. What's going on with this? And then, boom, complete silence. And then bombs are dropped.
And then we ask you when and how we can see the show, Marcy.
The show runs one weekend at Diva Theater at the Old Brick in Scranton, which is at 126 West Market Street. The show dates are July 24th, 25th, 26th at 8 p.m. And July 27th, there's a matinee at 3 p.m. You can find information on the Intrepidus Theater Lab Facebook page or the Diva Facebook page, and reservations can be made through either venue.
Yeah, because of the environmental staging, we are limited in seats. Hopefully people will come and join us.
Justin Costello, founder and artistic director of the Intrepidus Theater Lab, and actor Marcy Reby speaking about the Laramie Project by Moises Kaufman and the Tectonic Theater Project, to be presented by Intrepidus and Diva Theater this Thursday through Sunday, July 24th through the 27th, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 8 p.m., with a Sunday matinee at 3, at the Old Brick Theater, 126 West Market Street in Scranton. For more information on Facebook, it would be Diva Theater Scranton, so facebook.com/Diva Theater Scranton, or the Intrepidus Theater Lab Facebook page. And as Marcy and Justin suggest, there will be limited seating because of the size of the Diva Theater space, which is a small theater to begin with, black box in nature. But because of the way this piece is staged, there will probably be even fewer seats available. So reservations are advised. Diva Theater Scranton, so that's the Facebook page, facebook.com, Diva Theater Scranton. The Laramie Project, July 24th through the 27th, Diva Theater at the Old Brick, 126 West Market Street in Scranton. Shows Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 8, and Sunday at 3.